Accession number 18729, Reel 2.
This is Bothwell, Reel 2.
Right. Auntie said you've got a cheek. She said, come in here. So Mum said, well, we had nowhere else to go, Kitty. We hope that you'll be able to help us. So she said, well, you better wait here. She said, now I'll go and discuss it with my husband, Uncle Len, and her sister Dora. So she went off into the private quarters at the back. And she came back and she said, well, she said, you can stay. She said, on the understanding that you return back to where you came from as soon as possible. So Mother said, oh, don't worry, Kitty. She said, we won't burden you any longer than we have to. So Auntie took us through to the sitting room where her three sons were sitting. And she introduced us all. And she said that Auntie Molly and Uncle George and the girls were going to stay until they could find somewhere else to live. And we were taken upstairs and we were given the smallest bedrooms in the hotel complex. And we were treated like lepers, virtually. Auntie Kitty, she just wasn't interested in anything. She was very, very strict. Anyway, came the night time, and as we were preparing for bed, she said to Mother, she said, I hope that you haven't bought the German planes with you. So Mother said, oh, that's very unlikely, Kitty, don't you think? So Auntie Kitty said, oh, I don't know, she said. So we went up to bed, and us children, we'd only been in bed about an hour, I think, and the sirens went, and Auntie Kitty came into our rooms, and she said, this is the first air raid warning we've had. What did I say to you, Molly, about bringing the German planes over? So Mother said, oh, don't be stupid, Kitty. So we got our things together, grabbed our bed linen, and we all trooped down to the beer cellar. The beer barrels were on a brick plinth around the outside walls of the cellar. And Auntie Kitty told us to get up on the plinth and make ourselves comfortable in between the barrels, trying to keep the centre floor clear as much as possible. And we'd no sooner settled down and made ourselves comfortable, and there was one almighty bang, and the earth in the cellar shook with vibration. And the look on Auntie Kitty's face, you had to see it to believe it. Shock, horror. And she turned to Mother, and Mum said, don't say anything, Kitty. How could I possibly influence what the German Air Force are doing? So the next morning, Auntie Kitty was up first, and she went to open the gates for the delivery lorry, and the newspaper boy came round, and he said, oh, did you hear we had a bomb dropped in Dudley last night? So she said, yes. She said, we not only heard it, we felt it. She said, where did the bomb drop? Oh, it dropped in Stafford Street, which is almost opposite the church, the parish church at the top of the town, as the town is built on a hill, a slight hill. And this road, Stafford Street, is almost opposite the church. And he said, it caused quite a lot of damage. One or two people were killed, caught in the rubble of the houses. said for the shrapnel, he said, it flew quite some distance. He said, the shrapnel marks all down the front of the church. And Auntie Kitty said, she turned to us and she said, the sooner you find somewhere else to live, the better. But at the time, I'd had a knee injury at the school. We just moved into the senior school in 1939, September. Part of the old senior school had been demolished, and they were building a new 10 classroom extension on the side of the old hall. And for a year, the classes were divided up between the parish hall and the scout hut and the infant school. And my class was in the scout hut with one other class. And it was rather cramped. And then in the September, we were told to report back to school a day early. This was 1940. We were told to report back a day early. There was a possibility that we might be evacuated. So we turned up at the school, and as we went down the path to the new school, my sister and I and two friends, there was a young man standing outside the entrance to the church, at the side of the Abbey building. And we said, are you from a newspaper? And he said, yes. I said, are you going to take photographs of the church? No, I've been here half an hour, and I've been looking for the senior school. And I've had enough, and I'm going back to the office. So we said, have you got a car then? So he said, no. So we said, well, how did you get here? Because he'd got three camera bags and a tripod, which he kept dropping. So he said, no, he said, I can't drive a car. I'm only 17 and a half. So we said, well, can we carry the tripod for you? No, I can manage. So we said, well, follow us down the path and we will take you down to the school. And we walked down the path and we got down into the playground, and it was our first glimpse of the new, what we classed as the new school. And it was one very long corridor with 10 classrooms on one side, and the other side were two playgrounds, one for the boys, one for the girls, and in between was a new gym with cloakrooms and shower rooms. And we were totally fascinated. But as we got into the playground, the bell went. And we said to this young man, well, you wait in the yard here, and somebody will see you through the glass as they walk along the corridor. The second half of the morning, they had to keep us occupied because we'd gone in a day early. So we were told that we would be joining the class below us, and we would be going on the equipment in the gym. Now, I have no head for heights, and I was hopeless at sports because I had no strength in my legs. I couldn't run at all. Anyway, we get into the gym and had to climb up the bars up against the wall, got to the top and froze. And she said, well, teacher said, you've got to move. You're not to climb down the wall. You've got to reach out, grab hold of the rope and slide down. And the teacher had to come up and stand on the bars behind me before I would let go of the bars. And I grabbed the rope, and I got down, and I ended up with rope burns on my hands.
But you're saying that there was some possibility of your being evacuated?
Yes, well, they said that they had hoped that somebody would be coming from the council, but they'd had word that we were just outside the new exclusion area. So we had to live with the thought that we were still there, possibility of bombs falling on us.
And that was in September 1940?
Yeah.
Any other memories of the air raids on Dudley?
There were no others on Dudley at all. Just that one.
But you stayed in Dudley for the rest of the war, did you?
Yes.
With your Aunt Kitty?
No, no. I was saying, I was going to tell you how I got my leg injury on the first day at the school. We were in the gym, and this young photographer, he took two photographs in the playground, and as we came out of the school to go home to lunch, he was packing up his cameras, and we said to him, "Did you take any photographs?" And he said, "Yes, I took two." So I said, "Oh, will they be in the papers?" He said, "Well, not during the war, but they will be printed after the war." The first photograph was printed by Dr. Colchin from Birmingham University in his information about Brom, old pictures and memories of people of Birmingham. And the first photograph was published in January 1995. The second picture was printed in February last year of 1998. And in both instances, there was no information about... Well, the first picture, it said no venue, no date. And I said to my boys, "That's Erdington Abbey." I phoned up the paper and told them, but I don't think anybody wrote the information down. And then when I saw the second picture in February last year, I said to one of the boys, I said, "That is Erdington Abbey, and that is Miss Beckett." So he got the two photographs and compared them, and he said, "Mum, it's the same group of girls. The two classes below my class." So on the next day, we were told we'd got to go to a playing field at the other end of Erdington High Street to have a game of rounders with another school. And as we were about to leave the building, my sister came running down the corridor and she said, "We've just been told that Mr. Churchill has passed a new law that any children who had reached their 14th birthday, they could leave school and get a job to relieve those young women who were older and could do more valuable work in the factories or on farms or whatever." So she said, I'm putting my coat on," she said, "and I'm going home." So I joined the line of girls to walk along Erdington High Street to this playing field with the thought and the horror of me having to walk home from school on my own, and to every day after that I would be going to school on my own past three council schools where we got a lot of stick because we were Catholics. And it was similar to the intimidation that children get today. That doesn't change. So I get to this playing field, I hit a few balls, and I go to do a run on the rounders field. My left leg gives way, and I end up with a football instead of a knee. And I couldn't walk, and I couldn't get a bus or a tram home. I had to walk across one side of a triangle through streets that I didn't know with the aid of two of my school friends. So when raid started, Dad had to carry me down to the air raid shelter. So when we got to Dudley, I'd still got this bad knee. And Auntie Kitty said to my mother, "You must take her down to the hospital and get that leg seen to." So Mother said, she said to me, she said, "You might have to have an operation on that knee." Well, I had some horrific memories of having an operation when I was 11 for kidney stones. And the thought of having to go into hospital and have this anaesthetic, it frightened me to death. Anyway, Mother took me down to the hospital, to the orthopaedic clinic. Saw the surgeon and he said, "Well," he said, "you've torn a cartilage in your knee and it'll have to be removed." So I said, "I don't want an operation. I don't want an operation." And he said, "Well," he said, "you can have do some exercises to strengthen the muscles around the knee." But he said, "Eventually," he said, "you will end up a cripple and probably be in a wheelchair." He said, "The choice is yours." So Mother looked at me and she said, "You've got to have that operation." So I was booked in to have this op. And we'd been in Dudley then 6 weeks. I went in for the operation. I was in there for about 2.5 weeks. And the day Mother picked me up from the hospital, there were no buses on that road. So Mother brought down my baby sister's pushchair. And I could just manage to get into this pushchair. Mother pushed me home. And she said, "We're not going to Auntie Kitty's." I said, "Why not?" She said, "Well, while you were in hospital," she said, "I found a house to rent." And she said, "I spent a fortnight cleaning the house from top to bottom. It was in a rather filthy condition." And she said, "We're actually moving in today. We've worked hard so that when we got you out of hospital, we could move in together." So we moved into 8 Brook Street, which is just off the town centre.
But there were no more air raids on Dudley?
No, no. One Saturday, soon after that, now I'm trying to think when this was, 41, it might have been 1942, I was in the garden, and there was a naval pom-pom gun in the area, but nobody knew exactly where it was situated, and we heard this gun going off. And we heard the rockets going up into the sky. And all of a sudden we heard a whistling. And there was a loud explosion. And we felt the garden shook under our feet. And my mother came out and she said, "What on earth was that?" She said, "I didn't hear any sirens." I said, "No, Mum, you wouldn't. I said, "There's no planes going over." I said, "But the pom-pom gun was going." And we heard a few days later that shell from the pom-pom gun had gone up so far, and then something had gone wrong, and it had fallen back to earth, and it landed on a church hall where there was a wedding reception going on. And it was either the bride lost the lower half of both her legs and the husband was killed, or the husband who lost part of his legs and the bride was killed, and there were 3 or 4 other people killed and quite a few injuries. But we heard no more about that because they weren't allowed to print anything in the papers, anything to do with any raids or accidents, movement of troops. They weren't allowed to print anything.
Can you tell me about the foreign troops in Dudley,
yeah.
Please?
Yes. In January 1942, on the Saturday night, no, on the Friday night, during the night, the white American troops, the first troops to come over from America, a group of them, platoon of them, came to Dudley, and they were put into an empty warehouse in King Street, which was a road behind Top Church, and this King Street ran the full length parallel with the High Street, and we had to cross over King Street to get to our house, which was down a hill, and our turning was the second one on the right from the roundabout in King Street. The warehouse, when we walk up the hill, we turn right into King Street by the roundabout, and this warehouse, it was a clothing warehouse, was 200 or 300 yards down on the left hand side, and it was opposite a clothing factory, which we saw the girls going in and out of this factory, but we never saw any lorries, we never saw any evidence, and the girls who worked there were not allowed to talk about what they were making. It was all hush hush. Anyway, these soldiers on the Saturday, they settled in, and they spent all Sunday, no, they spent all Saturday settling into this big warehouse. And about 7 in the evening, they were allowed to go and explore the town. Now, when they were boarding the ship in America, they were told that the people of Britain were starving. They had no food. Everybody was walking around in rags. And because most of the male population had gone over to France and they'd been killed at Dunkirk, that the women were gagging for it. And I was told this by one of the soldiers a few weeks later. So this night, the soldiers go out on the town, and they find the streets deserted. The town was deserted. Now on a Saturday, you'd get married couples, courting couples, or groups of girls going to the cinema. You'd get the older men spending the night in the pubs. There was one dance hall down by Dudley Zoo, but I don't know whether that was open during the war, because I was only, about that time, I was about 41, I was 14.
Did you say it was January 42?
Oh yeah, January 42. I would have been, yes, I was 14. Because these soldiers, they came out of the pubs, and they hadn't, they didn't know much about the strength of British beer. And they got very drunk. Very, very drunk. And they walked up the High Street to go back to their barracks just in time to catch the people coming out of the pictures. And as soon as they saw all these young women and the middle-aged women and the older ones with their husbands walking down the street towards them, they pounced on the women. And if any of the English boys or young men or older husbands tried to stop them, they pushed the men out of the way, and the younger men, British men, as soon as they could, they escaped and ran off down the road. But there was one gentleman, he was over 60, with his wife. And one of the soldiers had grabbed hold of his wife. And he tried to stop this American. And the American pushed him. And he fell out into the road. And he tried to pick himself up, and this American went up to him and kicked him. And there was blood on the road and on the curb the next day.
Did you see this?
No, I didn't see it. I was told by a girl who I knew had been there. She'd gone to the pictures, and she said this gentleman, he was badly injured. And when, by the time the police and the ambulance arrived, the man was dead. And there was a post-mortem, and he died of a heart attack. But
Which street was that?
That was in the High Street. They were coming out of the cinema at the top, opposite the top church. Can't remember the name of it. Anyway, the British lads went down the High Street, and the Americans were coming out of the pubs from the lower part of the town. They were also drunk, and any girls that had managed to get away as they went down the High Street, so they got grabbed by the Americans coming up the High Street, and it ended up with a full-blown riot. And the British police, I understand, were called out, and the American military police, they were there, and it took them some time to get all these drunken Americans, and they were taken back to their barracks in King Street, and they were confined to barracks on the Sunday morning.
Was that riot on the same occasion when this gentleman was killed?
No, that's another incident, as later on. So, anyway, the following morning, on the Sunday morning, one of my young sisters was to make her first communion, and Mother had heard about this riot, and we had to go past this warehouse. Mother couldn't take my sister to church because she'd had a baby in the October, and the baby was poorly, and it was a bitterly cold day, and Mum wasn't too well. So Mum asked me to look after my younger sister. She said, "And don't let her walk, go anywhere near those American troops," she said. She said, "They sound like a load of wild animals." So I said, "All right, Mum." I said, "I'll make sure." So I grabbed hold of my sister by the hand and walked up the hill, turned into King Street and walked past this building. And my sister said, "Right," she said, "we're past the American soldiers now. Right, we needn't come any further." And she slipped her hand and